That was beautiful and that was amazing. Thank you, Jason. I adore you. So these butterfly things, the splendor and the majesty of these little insects, there are 18,000 different species of butterflies. That's not moths and butterflies. That's just the flutterbys, 18,000. Now, there's this reality that's true in the butterfly kingdom of mimicry that happens. One butterfly looks like another, and the reason why that works is, well, you may or may not know that a monarch feeds only on milkweed, which not only gives the butterfly a foul taste if any frog or bird tries to eat it, but the reality there is also that the bright colors on its wings signal to the predators, don't eat that guy. I've tasted it before, and it's not just a bad taste, it's toxic. They're poisonous. That's what happens in a monarch world. Now, there's another butterfly called the viceroy that looks just like it. And birds see that guy, and they go, oh, don't eat that one because that'll kill you. And it's just not true. There's this reality in nature, and that is there is mimicry that happens so that it keeps a bug alive a little bit longer. Now, you would think that mimicry would be a cool lifesaver. That is, wait, let's all start looking more and more and more like monarchs, and then we'll stay alive. You'd think there would be a tendency in their world for these insects to start looking more and more like each other over time, over lots of time, but it's just not true. Each insect has its own space. Every butterfly has its own specific identity and its role to play. And there is so much diversity, so much beauty that's found in this single insect. And life for the butterfly is a battle over identity. You get what I'm saying? It's a matter of each one of them figuring out, this is how this is working out for me, and this is how I stay alive, and this is how I reproduce. And they all have their own story, and that's true for me as well. My own space, my own role, my own place to belong. And so it's a battle for me to live out of that identity. So the Apostle Paul, he writes this letter called Colossians to a church in the city of Colossae, and this is helpful for our conversation because the reality is for these Colossian people, they were butterflies that were trying to crawl back into the chrysalis. They were having some moments when they were looking back and remembering their past or getting confused about what was in front of them. And so Paul was totally all about identity. And he writes this letter to say, remember who you are. Remember what you decided. Remember why you made that choice. Remember why you started following Christ. Paul was all about identity, and the people in Colossae had lost sight, and so he reminds them. Kevin is all about identity. And I'm here to remind you, because when things get intense, when things get crazy, I don't know if you've been watching the news lately, but things have gotten intense and things have gotten a little bit crazy, and our world has lost sight of what's important, or maybe that's not it. It's more like there's this process of redefining who we are and reminding ourselves what we're about. I want you to know I'm going to stand in the place of Paul tonight, and I'm going to be the one to remind, and I'm going to be the one to encourage you to fall back to those things that you know to be true. It's a confusing world, but Jesus brings order to the system. It's a fractured world, but he brings a sense of togetherness and belonging that nothing else can. Jesus makes a difference. His presence in a human's life makes a difference. And And so I'm going to give you a little bit of homework tonight. Thing number one is read chapter one of Colossians. If you've read it before, if you started out this study with me and you're kind of tracking along, go back and read chapter one. I would like to just hit you with a barrage of information that's all found in this one chapter. I want to hit you with so much information about Jesus and the difference that he makes. Jesus makes a difference when somebody says, I'm a follower of him. I'm going to let Paul tell us some of the things that he's aware of that happened when Jesus enters a human's life. Let me be specific. Jesus makes a specific difference in your faith. That is, chapter 1, verse 4, he says, guys, he's the source of your faith, but his presence will cause your faith to grow and to develop. That is, your trust will be a more significant part of how you do life. Chapter 1, verse 5, he impacts your hope. Do you live in a place where you could use some extra hope right now? Jesus makes the difference. He impacts that. Chapter 1, verse 5, same verse. He impacts your future expectation of what could happen and what might be before you. Chapter 1, verse 6, and also down in verse 10, he makes a difference in your productivity and how you feel like you're doing and carrying yourself in the world and the responsibilities that are in your hand. Chapter 1, verse 8, he impacts how you love each other and how you do relationship and how... I miss human beings. I'm so weary of this quarantine. And when it comes to that time when we have a bit more freedom, I'm looking forward to how I love others and how I express concern for the people around me, the people in my world. But beyond that, I want to communicate like Jesus that you make a difference. You have a place in my world and in my heart. Chapter 1, verse 9. He impacts the knowledge that you are gaining about God's desire for you and his will in your life. Chapter 1, verse 9 also, but again in verse 14, Paul repeats himself. He says, he's going to impact your prayer life. Not saying the right words to God, but rather there's this intimate bond between two beings that is living and dynamic and real and comes from a heart that is sincere. He impacts your wisdom, chapter 1, verse 9 also. He impacts your understanding and how he's giving you a greater grasp on what's going on in the world around you and how you understand his will for your life. Chapter 1, verse 10, he impacts your ability to honor him. He spells out through the power of his spirit, you want to bring me pleasure? You want to be a source of joy? Consider this. Chapter 1, verse 11, he impacts our knowledge and a growing sense of intimacy in our relationship with him. Chapter 1, verse 11 also, he impacts your strength and the power that you work out of. Chapter 1, verse 11, he impacts your endurance, your ability to carry on and hang in there when things get tough, like now, for example. Chapter 1, verse 11 also, he impacts your patience. Anybody could use some patience right now? Chapter 1, verse 11, he impacts your joyfulness. Chapter 1, verse 11, he changes how you express and feel gratitude. Chapter 1, verse 12, he impacts the way you have confidence and a sense of togetherness. Are you looking at this list? I told you it was going to be a barrage. We could spend the next several weeks unpacking all of this. I don't want to do that. What I want to do tonight is encourage you to listen with your heart. Do you see that list? What's the one thing that's at the top of your list? What's the one thing as I was going through this barrage where your heart sort of parked? Is there one thing that was most important to you? Did you feel any sense of emotion? Did you feel your heart tug? Did you feel anything as we were going through that list? As you look at it now, is there something that is most important? Do you have a top two, a top five? What's a big deal? What's important to your heart? I'm asking that because he's here, because he's present, because his spirit, one of the things he does is whisper and nudge. And that thing that bubbles to the top of your heart right now, I need for you to pay attention to that, because that's him speaking. That's him whispering. That's him hungering to communicate. So whatever resonates with you, whatever is at the top of your list, there's your second bit of homework. I would encourage you to read the whole chapter, but there's some nugget in there. There's something that really right now at this moment, you're going, that's the one. That's the thing that makes a difference. You got to wonder, okay, Kevin, I've been following with you and I've been tracking, and I remember you told us that Paul first does theology and then he gets to the practical stuff. But you sort of did his book backwards, and here at the end of this conversation, you're taking us all the way back to chapter one. What I'm thinking there is, in the imagery of caterpillar to butterfly, in that process, we sort of glossed over some of that stuff in chapter one so that we could come back to it, because there's no point in talking about flight to a caterpillar. But I hope, like me, because God's word is faithful and his spirit is always going to be so trustworthy, I hope that, like me, maybe your heart is more prepared now to hear, to receive, to respond, to allow this to make a difference. Maybe because of our conversations on Sunday nights, your Mondays feel differently because he's good and he's faithful. I hope it's not true, but it was true with the Colossian people and it's true nowadays. There's just a whole lot of butterflies that are missing the old days in the cocoon, that are trying to squeeze back into the chrysalis and trying to avoid the hurt and the pain and the harshness that transition and growth brings. There hasn't been anything delightful about this pandemic, except that God's here, except that he's moving and doing things. So if you have been tracking with me, I hope now you're going to give me permission, because I want to speak a word of truth. I'm going to use Paul's word, but I need you to hear this coming from my heart, because I think in this faith community that we're now a part of, God's been doing some things, and he's been whispering, and he's been speaking things to your heart. And so I would like to speak the truth about you. Give me permission to borrow some of his words to say this. Chapter 1, verse 13. You have been rescued. You've been rescued from the darkness. The darkness that you find in the chrysalis, that's not what you were made for. I need you to know that if you're a Jesus follower, you've been rescued. And life as a butterfly isn't always easy. There's lots that do not make it. This is a war. This is a battle. And people are dying all around us. But I need you to hear this, that you've been rescued from that. I need you to hear from the next person, verse 14, that you've been purchased. You've been redeemed. That he's looked into the darkness and he's identified you and he's offering you something bigger. As we sang tonight with Jason about the Father that extends mercy, about the warmth and the acceptance that's found in his hug, about the distance that isn't there anymore. Did that move you? Could you hear that? Was there any emotion to the reality that's just the hug and just the acceptance that you've been waiting for? I'm telling you, you have been redeemed. And verse 14, you've been declared sinless. Because of Jesus, you are righteous. You are holy. You are good. You are blameless. And so when you feel the blame, and so when you hear the voices inside your head, or when Satan is faithful to send somebody into your world to speak words of blame and shame, It's just not true. You can believe it if you like, but it doesn't change the truth, because you've been redeemed, because he's purchased you back from a slave owner, and you don't have to live that way anymore. And finally, in verse 14, you've been set free. You were made for flight. The truth about you is he has big designs and big plans, and you can live life on the ground, and you can be a butterfly who walks, but the design is for flight. That's for those who are following Jesus. And I'm sure there were part of the Colossian culture, part of the church family that met there or in the other two cities that this letter went to, that were listeners, that were a part of the community, but hadn't given their hearts to Jesus. And I just want to say, Jesus is where it's at. Did you hear Jason's words? I'd like to quote the theologian Jason Hill as he spoke these words. Jesus is the answer. And Jesus is doing things around you. Did you hear him say that? Did that create a hunger in your heart? If you're not a Jesus follower, I just want to encourage you to say, okay, I'm ready to think about this. Okay, Jesus, you keep whispering and you keep saying the words to me. I'm just telling you, I'm paying attention. So this world, this culture, this stuff that's going on right now, does it have you a little skittish, a little nervous? I mean, there's this virus thing that they start talking about, and all of a sudden we're slipping on those rubber gloves and strapping masks to our head, and all of a sudden that leads to that quarantine thing, and we're hiding out, and people are working from homes, and children aren't going to school, and we're thinking, man, could it get any worse than this? I don't know who the first one that said that, but we're all a little bit angry at you because it has. And we viewed a tragic murder as Mr. Floyd lost his life. And it wounded many hearts in our country. And it crushed the spirits of people around the globe. And now we're wounded deeply by both of these occurrences. And what's the thing with the Nation of Chaz in Seattle? It's like, how did we get here? The question is, now what? What's next? Is it going to get worse? Is this craziness ever going to stop? I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer, but I know who does. And so this conversation that we've been having, this ongoing discovery together of what God is doing, I got to say it's been rich and it's been meaningful for me. And by the way, even as Clark County in the state of Washington is beginning to open up finally, this beautiful connection online has been important enough that we're going to continue on, even though, by the way, on June 28th, we are going to have a face-to-face worship time. It's at the Vancouver Tech Center, which is in Southeast Vancouver. If you're not in Vancouver, I don't mean to, you know, make you feel outside, but this is going to be so good. You really need to visit Vancouver on June 28th at 5 p.m. Southeast 34th Street. Remember the old HP plant? It's at the crossroads of Hiddenbrook Street, about the block of 181st. At any rate, we're going to get together and we're going to worship. And yep, we're going to be wearing masks and there's going to be rubber gloves and we're going to do social distancing. But the truth is this. This online presence, it's symbolic of something that is meaningful, and that is face-to-face relationship. I would go one step further. when people get together as a faith community and we sing songs with Jason or with Malcolm that can actually be heard by Jason and Malcolm, when that happens, that itself is a symbol of a greater reality. People need people. Man, if that's one thing we've learned in this pandemic, is that we were made to be with other humans. So I want you to stop and ponder June 28th. I'm going to do that. I'm going to check out. If you've never checked out the Renovatus Church, do that on the 28th. As a matter of fact, I would go further. Have you figured out that we're not exactly horribly concerned about doing things smooth and clean and tidy? It's because life is not smooth and clean and tidy. And we don't even make an effort to make it spotless and clean. It doesn't reflect who we are. It doesn't reflect how life works. And so, frankly, don't just come on the 28th because what if you don't like it? Well, you need to know that maybe July 5th, if you come a second Sunday and a third Sunday, I would encourage you to come for at least a month so that you can at least get a flavor of what it really is like. I want to encourage you beyond that to pursue a faith community somewhere. Find a family. When this tug is so real on your heart, pay attention to it. This is a snapshot, but there's a real thing. This is a moment in time, but there is this full color thing, and we are all getting ready for it. So join us. It'll be worth your while. I want to wrap up by telling you an amazing story. The Greek language, the New Testament is written in the Greek language, and I'm sort of glad that Jesus came at a moment in time when that was the common language of the known world. That is, it was easily understood by a lot of people at the same time. But the beauty of it beyond that is it's a very specific and clear language. And so there's some words that are spelled out in Greek that are just amazing. One of these you might recognize. The exact word is metamorpho. That's the Greek word that we get the word metamorphosis from. It's used only four times in the New Testament, just four times. Twice, it's mentioned in the same story in the book of Matthew and also in Matthew 17, Mark 9, and Luke 9. It's the same story. Jesus invites three of his friends to join him, and they climb a pretty good-sized hill, and when they get to the top, they're sort of used to Jesus enjoying being alone, leaving the crowd, stepping back, and spending some time in prayer. And so that's what they assume is going on. They get to the top of the hill, and they have a moment when the boys start elbowing each other, and they're pointing to Jesus, and Jesus is getting bright. It's dark now, but he's getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And all of a sudden, I think there must have been this sense that this is glorious. That's a good word. This is glorious. Maybe we're the ones that are finally seeing Jesus like he really is. Maybe this is the real Jesus, and this other one has been the disguised Jesus. And so this was the best moment of their life. But it gets better, because as they're standing there with their mouths hanging open, two people appear with them, and I don't know how they knew who they were, but they said, "That's Moses, and that's Elijah. That's the great lawgiver, and that's the great prophet." And so these three humans watch these three amazing humans, one of them glowing in the dark, and Elijah and Jesus and Moses start talking about what's before Jesus. And he speaks to them of his death. And they speak words of comfort. And it's a glorious, amazing moment. Okay, that was really cool that we saw Jesus. But now we've seen Jesus like this. This is great. Wait, it gets greater. Now there's Elijah. Now there's Moses. This is glory at its best. Not true. The third thing that happens in this glorious night is all of a sudden, a cloud descends around them. And through the fog, through the Jesus shining in the cloud, they hear the voice of God. And he says, "This is my son that I love. Listen to him." That was the most remarkable moment that any human has ever experienced up until that moment, until they saw the resurrected Jesus stepping back into a broken body with new life. This was glory upon glory upon glory. And twice in that story, his transformation, his metamorphosis is described. Twice it's used in the four times talking about Jesus. The other two times, the only two times it's mentioned in the Bible again, is when he's talking about you. From 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning at verse 12, Paul writes to the city of Corinth, "Since we have such a hope, we're now very bold. We're not like Moses. Moses, who would put a veil over his face so that the Israelites wouldn't see his glory that he received from just seeing God face to face as it faded. But their minds of those Israelites, they were made dull for this day. That same veil remains with the old covenant when it's read. It's not been removed because only Christ has taken it away. Even to this day when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. But when anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. And the Lord is the Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. And we, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, we are being metamorphosized into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit." That was a little bit long, but I just need you to catch the big picture. That glory that those three guys saw, that's what he's transforming you into. The difference is, we're being transformed into his glory. That metamorphosis, it's by design. They speak of you in there. And the second place is in Romans chapter 12, where he talks to the church in Rome. "I plead with you guys, give your bodies to God because of all that he's done for you. Let your body be a living and a holy sacrifice, the kind that he's going to find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you, metamorpho you into a new person by changing the way you think, and then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect." Jason was so right when he said to us all, he's doing something. God's creating something. At Renovatus, we toss around this phrase almost so much that it might lose its impact. But I have moments when I just realize it is so true. He really is transforming us into our original purpose and our intended beauty. And I want to challenge you to pursue that. He loves you so, and he's looking for more time to be with you. The question is, now what? Well, we're going to pursue that more next week, but I want to challenge you to trust the one who knows the answer. Love you. See you next week.